Welcome to the UFO Files. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from the UFO Congress. And, of course, we're in Laughlin, Nevada at the Aquarius Resort Casino Hotel. And one of the first people that we ever had on the air is with us, Steve Bassett. And, Steve, how are you?
I'm just fine, Jerry. It's great to be with you again.
Yeah, you know, this Paul Heyer announcement, you need to get into that for us right off the top, I think, and talk to us a little bit about what's happening here. This seems to be pretty earth-shaking to me.
Well, it's significant. As you know, I'm an activist, a political activist, and my work is all about advocating for the truth embargo the government has imposed to end it, because I think it's time to do so. And I've been doing that through my work under Paradigm Research Group and also my Political Action PAC. And for the last 10 years, we've been doing everything we can to get this issue out there, to engage the political media, engage the Congress, candidates for office, and certainly the executive branch, the president, and so forth. And we don't have time to go into all the projects that Paradigm Research Group has done over the years, but a recent one may have borne fruit. And it's this. On the 29th...
Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think it's a direct... result, this announcement we're going to talk about, from something you did earlier.
That's right. On the 29th of January, Paradigm Research Group published an open letter to Al Gore. And that letter can be found at the Paradigm Research Group website, paradigmresearchgroup.org. It's also up on American Chronicles. You can search for it there. And this letter essentially anticipated that Gore would almost certainly win the Academy Award for Best Documentary at the Oscars on the 25th, which was a few days ago. And it basically said to him, the message was, that you have raised some extremely dire predictions regarding the planet and the human condition, and indicated that we've got to do something about it. He said it was a moral imperative. Well, if that's true, then... Anything which could dramatically impact our ability to respond to global warming that was not in play or left off the table would be wrong. It would be unethical. And the fact is that there is such significant an issue with respect to what's on the table, and that is the fact that there is extraterrestrial technology we're certain that has been garnered from extraterrestrial vehicles by the United States government since the 40s. And that this tech is sequestered in government laboratories, military laboratories, and available only for weapons development, not for dealing with other issues like global warming. And if this truth embargo will end, we can get that technology into play. And you need to speak to that, because I believe, and I was the author of the letter, that you know about this, because you were heavily involved in national security issues while in the Senate. One of your specialties was arms control, nuclear proliferation, and so forth. And, of course, you were an important vice president for 8 years. So if you're going to speak truth to power, it's not enough to just to address those truths which are convenient or self-serving or easy, but you have to speak the whole truth and nothing but the truth and leave your fate in the hands of history. And so this letter went out to 5,000 news outlets. It was published in a number of places and so forth and so forth. Okay. So, Gore won the Academy Award. He did not speak to the issue or mention it at all. That's fine. That was anticipated. However, our fine friends in Canada, Exopolitics Toronto, which is part of the Exopolitics movement, disclosure movement in Canada, Victor Vigiani, Mike Bird, they made sure the letter to Gore got to the attention of Paul Heyer, who is the former Minister of Defense back in the 60s and former Deputy Prime Minister of Canada. And a very well-known political figure up there, now very vigorous in his 83rd year. And Heyer, to his great credit, having come out publicly in September of 2005, stating that he believes the ET reality is true and Roswell crash did take place and so forth, really stuck his neck out, but with great impact, I believe, in Canada certainly, Heyer decided to speak to the ET tech issue. And so a press release was put out in which he also calls on this technology to be brought forward so we can deal with global warming in a proper way. And one of the papers that covered it was the Ottawa Citizen. And the heading of that article, just to make the point clear, was Alien Technology, the Best Hope to Save Our Planet. Ex-defense boss, says ex-defense boss, governments must reveal what they know, says Paul Heyer. Now... what's happened and why this is important is that this article got picked up by Drudge. Now, the Drudge Report, some people like it, some people don't. Fact is, it's one of the most heavily trafficked sites on the Internet. I go to it all the time. Millions of visitors every day go to the Drudge Report. And so, given the interesting subject matter we're talking about here, you can bet your bottom dollar that virtually everybody that goes to Drudge Report over the next few days is going to click on this link. That is going to have the effect of fully putting Paul Hellyer in play in the United States and making him a news subject and a news target, which means interviews and other things. And it also increases the likelihood that Gore is going to be asked about this, the matter in the that was brought up in the open letter to Gore, as well as Hellyer's comments, which puts him on the spot. Now, if Gore denies that there, flat out denies there could be any extraterrestrial technology, we've got him. We'll go after him immediately. If he hedges on the issue and leaves it open, that's good too. And of course, if he says, look, it's possible that it is there, it has enormous impact on the truth embargo. So this is a significant event. All thanks to the work of Victor Vigiani, Mike Bird, the ExoPolitics Toronto people, and of course the courage of Paul Hellyer, who late in his career, late in his life, has decided to be candid and speak about this publicly, and put his I think tremendous career and credibility behind the most important issue in the world today.
Now, this is really something that you've been working for a long time, and a lot of other people. And you know, the significance of the Gore letter and you writing it. Why did you choose to make it an open letter?
Well, I've done this over the years.
Yeah,
I've written an open letter to Steven Spielberg. It was published widely. I open letter to George Bush. Open letter to all the candidates in the 2004 election, and now this open letter to Gore. And the reason for this is to draw these people out. And here's the problem. The reason this truth embargo has lasted now 60 years, it's 2007, is that a whole lot of people that know full well there's an extraterrestrial presence, people of substance and money, resources and high influence, have chosen to go along with the embargo. They will not attack it. They will not address it. They will not confront it. They dance around it. They make movies about it. They write books.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
They make a lot of money from it, okay? Mm-hmm. Spielberg's made hundreds of millions of dollars off the extraterrestrial issue. We don't need to go there. But they will not speak to it because they're afraid of ridiculed or having a couple of jokes told about them on Jay Leno's show or David Letterman. We no longer have that luxury anymore. We are facing major environmental, geopolitical, national security issues, global security issues. There's an extraterrestrial presence. There's ET technology in government labs. We simply cannot continue this farce of a charade where, you know, half the American public knows there's an ET presence, says so in the polls, believes that Roswell was true, knows the government's lying, and that nothing happens. Nothing changes, right? Well, government witnesses are coming forward. That's helpful. There have been dozens of those, scores of those. And certain figures of note are speaking out. Dan Aykroyd has put his career and reputation behind this issue. He's spoken publicly. Now Paul Hellyer has come out. John Podesta came out in 2003 at two press conferences in the National Press Club, where he flat out said that the documents in the government's hands regarding extraterrestrials need to be released. Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, in a foreword to the book Roswell Digs, he's still governor, by the way, and a presidential candidate, stated that the Roswell issue hadn't been resolved and needs to be reinvestigated. So people are trying to come out, but the government itself will not yield. It continues to say its standard response to every inquiry, and there have been hundreds of thousands of them in the last 60 years, we do not investigate UFOs. They do not, but if there is something there, whatever, it doesn't pose a threat to our security. This insults the intelligence of every American citizen, right? It insults the intelligence of other foreign governments. It embarrasses the United States. It has to end. This embargo of this truth has to end now.
Now, I know you're getting ready to go back to Washington, D.C., and you may have some announcements yourself, or you may once again have a UFO political type conference coming up. We're not sure exactly when that'll happen, but I know it's getting closer.
Well, PRG held two conferences on called the X conferences, 2004-2005. They were very well received, but we lost about $40,000+, which really limited dramatically PRG's ability to function, Paradigm Research Group. So I'm in the process of raising the $50,000 needed to settle all accounts and clear the franchise so that the third conference can take place properly. I have 30,000 committed, believe it or not, and we're trying to find 20,000 more in 5K increments from people that want to support this work. And as soon as I have that, I am going to announce a date in Washington, D.C. for X Conference 2007 later in the year in the fall. And let's keep our fingers crossed.
Now when people listening, if they want to get in touch with you, that you have several ways to do that. Basically, off your website's the best way, probably.
Well, the PRG website has been around for 10 years now. The current address is paradigmresearchgroup.org. Their previous address was paradigmclock.com. That also gets you there. And you get to the main portal that has links to all of the PRG websites, including the main one, the PRG site. And so there's a huge amount of material there. The largest bibliography on the Internet on this issue, the largest media archive on the Internet, one of the best quotes directories on the Internet, the largest news article archive on the Internet, all there, along with a lot of other material, thousands of links to books, projects, films, documentaries, and so forth, of others in the field that have been working on this for 60 years. And, of course, the address for PRG is PRG, Paradigm Research Group, PRG at paradigmresearchgroup.org. And, of course, for myself, Stephen Bassett, you can reach us easily there.
We talk about, and we've been looking forward to going to maybe another conference because we know that those two were successful. I feel you really broke some ground there.
We did.
You went to the National Press Club with...
We held a press conference at the National Press Club after the X Conference 2005, and that press conference has turned up in a recent documentary called Fast Walkers, which premiered the first premiere was in Sholo, Arizona, then it premiered in Phoenix, and on March the 7th, it will premiere in Canada. Fast Walkers documentary, and the info on that can be found at fastwalkers.com, FASTWALKERS, fastwalkers.com, and Paul Hellyer is going to be there. There's going to be another press conference. So this
may get something else.
This great politician in Canada, who founded two political parties up there, when he was in Parliament, he was the youngest person at the time to be in Parliament in Canada. He became the deputy, the Minister of Defense under Lester Pearson, and the Deputy Prime Minister under Pierre Trudeau. This is an important man, and he has said, and he has contacted some of his people in the United States, high-level people in the military, who have confirmed to him that Roswell was true and a lot more. This man has courage. We need Americans of that rank and station to have the same courage, because this country is in deep trouble. We are in trouble environmentally. We have terrible problems in our foreign policy. We are losing respect all over the world because, frankly, we've invested too much into lying to our people and to the world's people about what is going on. We have lied about program after issue after program for 60 years, and it is time the United States gets in the truth business. If we do, we will start to regain the trust of the world's people, and we can build proper coalitions to deal with our common interests. But if we continue to lie about issues of this magnitude, no one is going to believe what America says, what America means, or want to participate in America's dreams.
We're talking with Stephen Bassett. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk. You've been away from Washington for a while, Stephen.
18 months in California, thanks to a very fine supporter who gave me a break, basically.
And I want to find out how it was out of the away from the Beltway. When we come back, this is Jerry Pippin. This is UFO Files. The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
as Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com. Hey, this is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from the UFO Congress, and of course we're in Laughlin, Nevada at the Aquarius Resort Casino Hotel. Steve Bassett with us, and you mentioned the clock. Has it moved?
Well, I reset the paradigm clock back in 2006. I think it was April, May of 2006. I put out a press release on it. Didn't get a lot of attention. I moved it 15 seconds to midnight. I mean, literally right at the edge of disclosure.
We're there.
Now, the paradigm clock, for those listeners who don't know about it, which is at the paradigmresearchgroup.org site, was created in 1998 as to do the same job that the Doomsday Clock did, which is to draw attention to an issue. The Doomsday Clock, of course, created in 1947, drew attention to nuclear war by showing how whether the world was moving closer or further from nuclear war, which would be midnight on that clock. And the Paradigm Clock was designed to show how close we were getting to disclosure, which is the formal, is a very, very precisely defined as the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by the world's governments. And that's what midnight on the paradigm clock is, and that was published retroactively to 1947, and then the clock shows how it's moved one way or the other over the years, and the time has been reset several times since 1998. The reason I moved it to 15 seconds to midnight was because in that period, I received information from extremely high sources, strong sources, that confirmed what I sort of suspected, that there was an extraordinary breach that had developed between the military and the intelligence community and our executive branch. I think everyone can guess what that breach is about, so I won't go into that. But it was extraordinary. I've never had one quite like that in our history. And that as a result, it opened up a window of opportunity for this process to suddenly accelerate and be resolved. The reason being that with this extraordinary breach, if elements within the military intelligence complex wanted to go ahead with disclosure, and we know there are some that want to do that, and the executive tried to block it, I don't think they would have yielded to that. They would have gone forward anyway. And secondly, if the executive, under enormous pressure by world events and internal issues, I think would be more open than ever to what would be a cosmic change of subject. And there is no bigger change of subject available to the human race right now than acknowledging the extraterrestrial presence. I think that will seriously focus the attention of millions, if not billions, of people on something which has very significant long-term potential benefits and enormous implications, and maybe take their minds off a lot of the bad behavior that not only they're watching, but even participating in. So this circumstance and some other factors is why I moved the clock so close, and that window of opportunity still exists. And if nothing happens in 2007, probably the end of 2007, I will move the clock away from midnight. But I have a very strong feeling about this year. I think 2007 could be the year that the breach of the wall, the breach of the truth embargo occurs, either in the United States coming out of the military intelligence community or from the executive or from another country, Canada, Mexico, France, the UK, Brazil even, though I don't know if that would trip the truth embargo or not, but it might. Any of these countries could break the embargo independently, which would lead to the United States following suit. So this could be the year. And let's face it, folks, if you've been paying attention and watching the news the last 3 years, don't we need a change of subject? Don't we need something else to focus on and direct our energies and resources to than the madness that seems to be going on? And there is a parallel to this. And the parallel was at the worst part of the Cold War, when everybody was calling everybody names and students were hiding under their desks, and it was the evil, evil, you know, Marxist-Leninist. Kennedy did a brilliant thing. He launched the space program and created a friendly competition between us and the Soviet Union to get to space and so forth. And enormous amounts of resources put in that. And the world's attention was shifted from ideological death throes to our death match to a, quote, scientific competition, and we turn to the stars. And I think that dramatically lessened the tensions and helped eventually lead to the end of the Cold War. And now, as you know, cooperation between Russia, other nations, and the United States in space. We need another change of subject like that because things have turned bad again.
So you're still pretty optimistic that we're getting close to disclosure?
Oh, no. Disclosure is inevitable. Disclosure is inevitable. The only question is, are we moving closer, moving toward it, or away from it? Right now, we're moving toward it, and therefore the opportunity for it to happen now as opposed to later is great. And that's why, after 18 months in California, I am returning to Washington to set up again and fully re-engage more actively than ever the United States Congress and all the political media that are there.
Now, you've been on the West Coast for 18 months, as you just said.
Yeah.
Did you get a little different perspective when you got out of the belt?
Oh, yes.
Tell me a little bit about your impressions.
You know, I was in the Bay Area, which is a lot of intellectual activity there, a lot of political activity, and
I
met a lot of new people.
But they kicked me out. No,
you probably shouldn't go there. But I met a lot of interesting people, made some new contacts, and also went to a number of events. So it was a very valuable 18 months. And it was courtesy of one of my dear supporters, a gentleman by the name of Sergio Lube, who is a jeweler manufacturer out there and very much interested in the subject. He networks people together by the thousands, and he has a website, sergiolube.inc. Check it out. But without his help, I couldn't have done that. And now I have another supporter who's going to help me back in the East Coast. And eventually, when we get major funding, and I'm talking $1-2 million, then
when you get this kind of funding, what kind of level you're moving to? Can you give me a hint?
I've created an action plan that I've put down on paper that has been distributed to a few individuals.
So Bassett does have a plan.
Well, it's the Paradigm Research Group Action Plan, and basically it is a $2 million proposal, a project that is designed to effectuate certain projects, certain things that have to be done that have actually never been done before, with the goal of ending the truth embargo no later than the summer of 2009, assuming it doesn't end itself, right, between now and then. And that project is in some hands. $1 million would be outside money, and the other million would be generated by PRG using that money and in various ways that create what we call funding multipliers. And that is what real funding could do. Without that, we move forward doing what we can, doing the kind of advocacy that, you know, the inexpensive stuff like the open letter to Gore, which was triggered the Hellyer and now has a Drudge connection. We do what we can, but if real money would ever turn up from wherever, the things that we could be done would put, I think, pressure on the truth embargo it simply could not withstand.
Now, how about the attitude overall in the Bay Area? Is it totally different than the mindset than it is in the Beltline in Washington, D.C.?
Well, look, the Bay Area is far more, it's one of the most progressive and left of center areas in the United States. So you're going to meet a lot of people left of center there. Certainly the number of people that believe the ET presence is real is every bit as high as the national polls show. 50% is probably higher. I ran into a lot of people, of course, that were firmly committed. And I talked to some intellectuals that people would know who they were, who are in the closet on this issue, but I think are open to the possibility of going public in the near future. Believe me, if you could somehow privately interview every professor in this country, every scientist and every politician in this country, where they knew they could tell you what their thoughts are on this without any fear of it being known, you would be absolutely astounded at how many scientists, political leaders, academics, writers and authors pretty much have figured out that the ET presence is real. But the truth embargo has been effective, and they're concerned about the ridicule, they're concerned about the Letterman jokes and the Leno jokes, and so they kind of hold back. But that is changing. And you're going to see more people of note coming forward, more people of substance, people who have substantial careers known to the American people coming forward and saying, look, you know, what can I say? ETs are here, right? I'm pretty sure of it. In fact, I'm certain of it. And you're going to have people coming forward that are notable who have had experiences, who have had direct contact, what we call the contactee phenomena, the abduction phenomena, experiencer phenomena. That is happening and has happened too. So, again, tell me how a truth embargo could withstand this kind of publicity, this kind of process for very long.
Now when we talk about the political ramifications of mentioning UFOs and saying, yeah, they're real, and doing it with a straight face, you ran for Congress once doing that.
Well, I ran for Congress as an independent, as an activist maneuver to get the thing on the issue.
But you did
talk
about UFOs.
Well, because I ran as independent, we got 5,000 signatures. I actually got on the ballot. And since I was on the ballot, I had access to some of the debates. I was kept out of 16, but I got into 5. And so I, you know, one of them was televised. In fact, the main one was televised. And so I was there on the stage with the other two candidates, Connie Morella and Chris Van Hollen. And I was being asked questions about the extraterrestrial issue, and they had to respond. Now, they dodged it, but they didn't ridicule it. In fact, nobody really ridiculed the issue in the entire time that I was in that campaign. Nobody challenged me. Nobody said, "Oh no, there's nothing there."
How about as a lobbyist calling on these offices and the movers and shakers behind the Congress?
All of the meetings since 1997 that I have had on the Hill and with political media, which is where I focus most of my attention, reporters. Only one person in all of 10 years has ever said to me, "Mr. Bassett, there are no extraterrestrials." And that was a fellow by the name of David Von Driel, who at the time had been made editor of the style section of the Washington Post. He's now, I think, a reporter or back in a general reporting role. But when I contacted him about doing an interview or something, he sent me a fax that I still have. I've kept it, and I will eventually frame it, where he says, "Mr. Bassett, there are no extraterrestrials. But if you find one, bring them in, and we'll interview them." That's the only person in 10 years that's been able to say that to me. Now, I've had plenty of people say, "Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it's true," or, "Yeah, I kind of doubt. I'd like to know more," whatever. I've had plenty of that. Only one person in 10 years. You know why? Because they know it's true, or they suspect it's true, and they don't want to be telling too many people it ain't true because they're going to be embarrassed.
Are these people really in the dark, or are they keeping a secret?
Look, there are... Based on just what has come out in the public domain, in documentaries and films and books, you can't avoid it. Most intelligent people in this country have come to the conclusion simply on their own. They don't have to have a sighting. They don't have to be researchers. They figured it out. But the number of people that will publicly state that conclusion is obviously much less. That's why the polls are a better reflection. 50% of the American people say that they believe UFOs are here now. However, that's 50% of the total population. If you go up in an education level, up in an income level, the number goes up. And so when you're talking about educated people in business, finance, academia, and politics, I think the number of people on that level, if they were polled only, in other words, if you narrowed the set to those people, I think it's 75%. If they could be privately interviewed, would stipulate privately, knowing that there was no risk to them, that they believe that either they know that there's an ET presence or they strongly suspect it. Now think about that, and think about the dichotomy between that and the reality in which the Congress will do absolutely nothing on this major issue with enormous consequence, not the least of which, its impact on the global warming issue, which we're told if we don't do something about, Florida's going to be underwater, the economies of Europe and the United States are going to collapse, millions if not hundreds of millions of people are going to die, but ET technology, which could dramatically alter that equation, can't be brought out because of national security issues translated, too many people would be embarrassed.
So thanks very much to you, Bassett, for coming by. And let's talking about that Paul Heyer announcement up in Canada. And it is a result of your open letter to Al Gore, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I take some credit, but I think the real credit got to go to Paul Heyer, who it continues to speak to this, continues not to back off, and apparently is not going to back off. And what does the America do when a former minister of defense of one of its most important allies and a former deputy prime minister is now speaking this way? It really makes a lot of our retired high-level people look a little bit, how would you say, meek? I'm trying to be kind here. Meek, taciturn, maybe lacking... the kind of clear thinking and courage we need to get to the bottom of
somebody in this country with some guts.
We need an American Paul Heyer, and we need him now.
A former Secretary
of Defense, former major politician. I know that there are a number of them that know the ET presence is here. We need somebody to come forward and say something.
Okay, we're broadcasting from the UFO Congress here in Laughlin, Nevada. We're going to switch gears now and talk about another meeting out in the middle of the desert in California of our next guest at the Integraton. And they're going to have another meeting again this April. We were out there last year, and I think you'll find that interesting, what they have planned out there in the middle of the California desert. It goes all the way back to the 50s in that activity. Stephen Bassett, we want to remind everybody that you're going to have a conference coming up in Washington, D.C.
Hopefully.
Sometime, probably this year, if not soon.
Eventually, but hopefully this year in the fall.
Well, you're like the junkyard dog. You're not going to let loose.
No, I'm not going to give up.
Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
This didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippin Show.
As promised, we are going to talk about the Retro Conference 2, the Integraton, and nobody knows more about it than Reverend Bob Short. We call him Reverend Bob, but he's really Robert Short.
And, that's right, Jerry.
How are you?
I'm just Danny Peachy, sir.
Now, we have on our website the story about the first time you went out there in the desert.
Retro
and all
UFO
of that, but
convention.
You and I were out there last year,
and you were so kind, Jerry, to introduce me. I was that was very, very nice of you. I appreciate it.
Well, Barbara Harris is going to do it again, and I thought it'd be a good chance for you to come on the air and tell us what is planned this year, and give us the dates, and then I want to talk a little bit about some of your experiences.
Okay. Anyway, it'll be April 21st and 22nd this year. Out at the Integratron, which is about 3 miles from the very famous giant rock where most of the UFO business got started back in the 50s, okay? And anyway, Barbara and Robert Harris are the hosts of that convention there at the Integratron this year, as it was last year. This is the second annual. It's going to be much more simplified. And the boys from San Bernardino County, by the way, are going to cooperate this time. She tells me.
Yeah, she had all kinds of little
problems
last year, but
yes,
we still had
right. Because
what
they thought, see, they showed up after we put up all our booths and everything else. They showed up and they thought everybody was going to cram into the Integratron building, and they couldn't allow that under their rulings. And when they got out there, they were absolutely chagrined to find out that they were totally wrong. And they started apologizing, said, "Oh, we're terrible. Oh, we're so sorry. We thought you were going to put all the people in the Integratron. Oh, we didn't know that you were going to have booths and all this. Oh, my." And they were really upset. And so, anyway, they told her this year they would cooperate. But she's only going to have, she's going to be make allowance for only 200 people again this year, even though it's going to be 2 days. Now, I will be speaking most of Saturday afternoon, because when we were there last year, as you recall, even after I was into the end of my two-hour talk, the people said, "Oh, no, let him go on. Let him continue. We want to hear this." And they said, "Well, we can't do that because we have another speaker coming on and we have to allow it." So anyway, she realized that people wanted really to hear this information and she wanted to give us enough time. Well, I will be speaking on Saturday, April 21st, which will be having to do with what happened at Giant Rock and the experiences there and how many people turned out for it. As a matter of fact, I will say, at Giant Rock, we used to have 10 to 12,000 people used to turn out for these conventions from 1954 on through the 60s, okay? Which was totally, totally incredible to have that many people out there in a desert area camping and whatever. It so happens that our good friend, Matthew Boone, who's the son of Daniel Boone, who's one of the early pioneers at Giant Rock, just like myself. Matthew was there with his wife and a friend, standing on the grounds of the Integratron, and at about, I think it was close to 8 o'clock or so, after we had already left to our motel and sleep. And anyway, the craft showed up overhead. Matthew saw, and his wife and his friend saw this, and they were pointing it up, and they were yelling, "Look, everybody, look, look up, look up, look up there, look, there they are." And they couldn't hear him because they had a rock band that was playing so loud that people halfway to Giant Rock could actually hear the music. So anyway, we got photographs. So there was a lady there by the name of Nancy, I won't give you the last name. Yeah, but just the first name.
Nancy McKinney.
Yeah, okay. Well, you said it. Anyway.
Now I'm in trouble.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
Yeah.
Anyway, and she took some wonderful photographs. It has several of the objects with a red field around them and one great big white object, and then a picture of Adam Barbara with all of these orbs all over the photographs out in front of them. Just incredible. And anyway, but we didn't know this. You see, we were already gone. Well, when we got back to our home in Arizona, in Coronville, Arizona, we were told by our sources in communications, extraterrestrial communications, I am a space channel.
Yeah, and we talked about that, yeah. And we've gone into great detail about
that. They described what they were doing there. They formed a triangle with various nodal points, such as Retchi Road and Border Road, Giant Rock at one nodal point, and Old Woman Springs Road, and Retchi Road is another nodal point. And then they put one of their craft right in the middle of this triangle, representing the Integratron. They told us how they did this, and then they formed a line of ships, about six of them, that actually were seen by Matthew Boone. So we were talking to Matthew on the phone, and we started describing this, what they were telling us. And Matthew said, yeah, Bob, yeah, that's exactly what they did. He said, that's absolutely right on. He said, your information is absolutely right on. He said, that's what... I said, really? He said, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, my goodness sake, oh, my goodness, you know. Well, anyway, we have the photographs with us today during this UFO convention, this UFO Congress convention here in Laughlin, Nevada. But anyway, we're going to have a wonderful time. And Frank Stranges, by the way.
Now, you'll be there on Sunday, right?
Yes, I will. Frank Stranges.
You're there on Saturday.
I'm on there Saturday. But Dr. Frank Stranges, okay. Who's also one of the old-timers from Giant Rock, will be there to talk most of Sunday. And there's going to be an Integratron tour and a sound bath. There's going to be the Voices of the Past by the Morongo Basin Historical Society, who are they're very good friends of mine,
and they're very interesting people, and there's a whole lot of history that goes in
absolutely.
Around
yep.
that they cover.
That's right, and of course the Carl sisters, Nancy and Joan, they're going to be there, and we're going to have Tesla demonstrations and art displays and other people that have had experiences with UFOs. And,
now I think so Barbara told me she's going to start later than she did last time.
Also, I'm going to be doing the Native American ceremony because I'm also partly Cherokee.
And we have a recording of that.
I was inducted into the Lakota Sioux Nation in 2004 by my adopted grandfather, Chief Black Spotted Horse of the Eagle Clan of the Lakota Sioux. He's Unk Papa. He's a relative of Sitting Bull. Anyway, he came and inducted me into the nation in 2004. So I'm going to be doing the ceremonies I did last year twice. So if you are really interested in this, I hope that you will attend this. We have flyers on this.
And we have a link on our website to it as well.
That's right. And the prices are given. I won't give them out over the air, but the prices are listed on the brochure. It has an email and a phone number that you can call for further information.
Right, and we have that information posted on the website, so
right,
they can
correct.
Do it as well.
Okay, but the space is limited. It's 199 people, and it's first come, first served. So if you want to
attend
this...
Is that each day? I guess it is.
I think so. Or it could be 199 people in total. I don't know.
I'm not sure
either. Barbara Harris's, that's her thing. That she knows about, and you'll have to get in touch with them about that.
I went out to the Giant Rock. It's not easy to get there, but...
No, it's not. It's about 3 miles from the Integratron on a very loamy road, dirt road.
That's what I'm talking about. The road is...
And if it isn't, let us say, scraped...
Maybe they fixed it a little this year.
You better have a four-wheel, I think. It might be a good idea. Trying to get out there with an ordinary automobile, if you're not careful, you might get stuck. But anyway, you'd have to get out and go trying to find somebody to pull you out.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of Giant Rock and the Integratron themselves. They're intertwined, I take it.
Well, Van Tassel... George Van Tassel was a very famous individual. He was claimed to be an aeronautical engineer. He worked with Howard Hughes and he worked for Lockheed and so forth over periods of time. But anyway, he wanted to... Because of health reasons and one thing or another, he wanted to get out away from the too much of civilization. He wanted to get out where the air was pure and so forth. So he made friends over looking out in the desert. He made friends with a gentleman that lived out there at the time. I wish I could remember. I remember his first name, Frank, but I can't think of the last name of this gentleman. He was German, and he was a metaphysician. He just was kind of a loner, and he lived underneath this rock. He had bored out underneath this rock and had cemented it in and so forth, made a nice little home there and so forth. But you see what happened as a result of being out there all by himself, and he was German. It was during World War II.
They killed him, right?
Yes. Well, actually what happened, they didn't kill him, but what happened was that evidently somebody tried to claim that he was a German, possibly a German saboteur, that he was setting up a secret base out there for parachutists to come in and pour one thing and another. And so the deputy sheriffs were called out, and they came out and they said, I'm sorry, we're going to have to take you in, sir, and interrogate you and so forth. We can't have you, because we've had reports that you may be building up something. And he was just totally... couldn't believe that they were doing this to him. But anyway, he said, would you allow me to have a change of clothes? Let me go down and change my clothes. They said, well, okay. And they didn't follow him. They didn't try to guard him or follow him. He went down, and he killed himself underneath the rock, blew himself to bits.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And anyway, Van Tassel, before that, had already made friends with him. And so evidently, this then was open, a 33-acre area there, the giant rock, was open for lease. So Van Tassel found out about it, and he leased it from the Bureau of Land Management. And then he opened up an airport called Giant Rock Airport with the, the CAA. I think it was called Civilian Aviation Authority, okay, which then became the Federal Aviation Authority, okay. But anyway, in 1953, Van Tassel had an experience where he had a UFO came down and landed about 3 o'clock in the morning and woke him up and wanted him to go with them into their ship and so forth. They had something to impart to him. And he tried to wake his family. Couldn't wake them up. He tried. He couldn't wake anybody up. And they said, no, we just want to talk to you. There's a gentleman who's this alien individual. His name was Salganda. And so anyway, they did take him on board the ship. And they debriefed him on something having to do with what was going to be later the Integratron, that they were going to give him also designs of how to put it together and so forth. It was the first device of this type anywhere on the face of the Earth, okay, including how to build the building itself with hardly any metal in it. It was just an incredible, phenomenal thing. And so then they began visiting the rock from time to time. They also began flyovers over the rock. Now, in 1954, Van Tassel finally decided that he was going to hold his first UFO or spacecraft convention out there at Giant Rock in 1954. And he invited speakers that had UFO experiences to come and participate in that or be speakers on his program. So this gentleman by the name of Daniel W. Fry, who was an electrical engineer, he'd had an experience at White Sands area in New Mexico, where he came upon a craft, and it looked all by itself at night. He walked up to it and began to rub the surface up, and all of a sudden he heard a voice say, now this is Daniel W. Fry I'm talking about now. He heard a voice say, get away, bud, it's still hot, so forth. In other words, he was rubbing the field of the object because he noticed it was kind of a bluish-violet color, and he jumped back and so forth, and later on he had to go up to Merlin, Oregon, because his liver began to swell up. And he almost lost his life, but anyway, as a result of radiation, I guess. But anyway, so he became the first speaker in 1954 for the Giant Rock Convention. And then this was followed by a series of other speakers over periods of years, such as Orfeo Angelusi, Wayne Aho, Bruce Cathy, who did ley lines. He was a former airline pilot. Guy Kirkwood or Mel Noel.
All the names in early ufology.
And George Hunt Williamson, Richard Miller, John W.R. Nebel, W.R. Newark, New Jersey. Mark Probert, who was a medium, who had this entity he called Yada Tashiti. He'd talk like this. He'd say, greetings, I am Yata Tishiiti, and so forth. He'd talk, and that's the way he would talk. But anyway, he had the gentleman down in Florida, all these names starting to remember him, Howard. I wish I could remember his last name. But anyway, I'm sorry if you're hearing this, Howard. I'm sorry. But anyway, so he had all of these various speakers over a series of years. They would come and speak as to their own UFO experiences, which were absolutely phenomenal, incredible. And then we began to have also flyovers of UFOs. In fact, in 1967, while I was sitting talking to a crowd of about seven people, about seven deep around me, describing how we get our communications, this lone UFO from the north edge of the field began to move slowly about 300 feet up over the edge of the field. All we could see was the bottom of the craft with a crosshatch with kind of a fuchsia color coming from like a fluorescent color underneath it, with a ring of white light with lights shining down silently, no sound. And we could hear people singing in the restaurant and a dog barking, but we could hear people saying, "That's no airplane, that's no airplane." And so anyway, it moved clear down to the edge of the airfield toward Goat Mountain. It stopped and hovered. I got my flashlight out and began flashing Morse code, AA, AA, who are you, who are you? My wife Shirley said, "Robert, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm trying to find give them the identification. Who are they?" And she said, "You know better than that. You can talk to them. Ask them to do something." I said, "Okay." So I set it out open. I said, "Would you please move off to the right a certain ways or a certain distance?" I no sooner got the words out of my mouth than they did exactly that. They moved off just this short of a mile, then moved back where they had originally been by Goat Mountain, and then hovered there for a period of time, and then moved off toward Joshua Tree. And everybody was just absolutely flabbergasted. Nobody took any pictures, okay?
That was back in 1957?
This was back in, 1967.
67,
October,
okay.
Of 1967. That was followed where we lived at Joshua Tree at that time. We had a neighbor friend of ours that told Shirley to get her camera out and go outside behind the house. There was going to be a flying saucer behind our house in about 5 minutes. In the meantime, he walked over and joined her, and sure enough, this object began to form on the northeast side of this big hill of granite. We've got photographs of this, and it moved back behind the hill, came out on the southeast side with the ionization around it in the perfect form of a saucer. We've got that in a color photograph. Incredible. So we've had these experiences over many, many years, but Giant Rock was absolutely incredible. We even had Criswell out there one time. And I was channeling. I had this heavy, kind of a heavy coat on, and all these people, it was cold, very cold, and all these people were standing by waiting for me to start this channeling in kind of an alcove there at Giant Rock. Well, anyway, my wife said, "Well, now, Bob, Robert, are you ready to start?" I said, "Well, yeah." She said, "Well, you better take your jacket off, say." So I did, okay, and all these people were shivering and cold, so forth. I didn't feel a thing. I didn't feel anything. In this altered state, I went out. I didn't feel a single thing.
You weren't cold at all.
I wasn't cold at all, okay? I was very warm, as a matter of fact. You know, I was almost sweating. And these people said, "You're what? You're sweating?" I said, "Yeah." And that's, they use a beam device to communicate. I said, "Yeah, that's what happens, you know." And they were totally floored. They couldn't believe it, but they heard the voice. And they said this, and the voice just rang because of the walks and everything. It was like an amphitheater almost, you know. It was really absolutely phenomenal. These things happened over many, many years. It was just totally, and I worked with George Hunt Williamson for many years. We even did archaeological explorations and UFO stuff down in South America and Peru. We went looking for El Gran Paititi, the lost land of the Jaguar Kings. We found some of the hieroglyphs back in a jungle area, which was, it just blew us away. Williamson took pictures of it. I don't know whatever happened to him, because he passed away in Prescott, Arizona a number of years ago. Heart problems. I didn't know he had this. But anyway, we had UFO experiences with him and Dick Miller and all these people. It was just totally, totally incredible. But anyway, we're going to have this wonderful retro UFO returns convention, the second annual, at the Integratron near Giant Rock, 3 miles from Giant Rock. We're going to have tours out to the rock, which I might be a part of also. So be sure and join us. You'll enjoy yourself. You'll love it.
And right, we have a connection on the website. Now, hold on, Robert.
Okay.
Sure.
Right.
We'll be right back. Okay. Got to take a break. I want to talk to you about what's happening here at the UFO Congress. I've had some pretty strange stories. I want to see strange stories follow you. So there's probably you can validate them.
That's right.
Or something. We'll be back. I'm Jerry Pippen.
Fox It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Files on JerryPippin.com.
Looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles west.
This is Jerry Pippin with UFO Congress, and we have Robert Short with us. And I had more than one person come up to me and said, "Hey, have you seen this or that happening?" In fact, a fellow yesterday was on the show talking about that he felt he had been abducted here at the conference.
Is that right?
And he had blood on his pillow from the nose, and he could remember the whole thing.
That's incredible. I would believe it. Yeah, it happen.
I mean, things like this happen around here.
They sure
You've
do.
Been coming here a lot.
I have. That's right.
I missed something this
Jerry,
year?
Jerry, I have been with these Congress conventions since 1991 at the Riviera Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. Okay? I have come to every single one with my wife, Shirley. We've been to every single one since it started. And if it hadn't been for the wonderful gentleman, Wendell Stevens, who lent his superior intelligence and his some of his funding, possibly we wouldn't even had the first one. So bless his heart, he did invest in it and saw the wisdom of it, and it went off. And it was just it was phenomenal. We had a gentleman by the name of Carl Van Blierden, who was the transcriber for the group in South Africa. His name is Edwin. He does the same thing I do, Jerry. He channels, okay?
Okay.
He was told the same thing that we were told years ago in Winslow, Arizona, when we were in on ham radio communications before we were shut down by the FCC for operating illegally with an unknown source, because they didn't... People in the UFOs, they don't give call letters. Are you kidding?
And they didn't apply for a license.
That's right.
They didn't pay
fee. That's right. And so we were told what we needed to do and everything. They didn't file against us, thank God. I was scared out of my ever-loving, I can tell you. But anyway, from that, things developed on down the line in the 50s. But going back to the UFO Congress here, I'll tell you something. I dearly wish that Rick Williamson was still alive, because, boy, he would really add something to this. And in fact, all those individuals who were early on these people would just be totally, totally enraptured. I mean, they really had real experiences.
I remember a couple, 3 years ago, right here, when this was the Flamingo instead of the Aquarius, Somebody took a picture of what looked like a craft hovering out here over the river.
That's right. We've got that. That's right. And we've got more than that, too. We've got several pictures. We've got a picture of an actual transport sled that Bob Renaud had an illustration of in one of Gabriel Green's magazines. It absolutely matches, okay? And I said, is that incredible? Oh, my goodness. And we have pictures of UFOs hovering, over the rock, over the river and so forth, in color, okay? And
Have you ever tried to channel while you're here?
Well, I've done readings for people in my room and so forth, but not channel here. I would imagine it would probably be a little fascinating, but no, I haven't.
I wasn't going to ask you to do it right here on the air, but I mean, curious.
It's totally different from the voice you're hearing right now.
Different. I know. I've been
it's very powerful, okay?
Yeah. And the name of that entity is...
I never
wanted to tell me the name.
That's right. I don't want to give the name out.
I've tried this Wendell three
did,
times.
Wendell
once.
Did over the microphone. So he did. And I told him who I was in touch with. But anyway, I don't want to give it over the net, because, you get people. There's people, yes, that are really for real, but then there's a lot of the other ones that, they send you stuff in the mail or whatever, and it's just...
Okay, we'll respect that. Yeah.
But anyway, we have these pictures here. So it does happen. We even have a picture of an orb right here in the lobby, right here where we're speaking, right there. Remember when they had the dummy UFO alien with its so-called spaceship?
Sure, I have a picture of that on my website.
We have a picture of an orb right up over the top of it.
Oh, really?
That you can see through. You can look through it and see it. And it's a round orb, But you can also, it's transparent. You can actually look through it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That we have that in our photo book too.
Well, that was here about 4 years ago or 3 years ago.
Yeah, right here at here at the Flamingo. What is now the Aquarius Resort?
Right.
Was originally the Flamingo, and they've been wonderful to us. I must congratulate and commend the people that both at the Flamingo, the original Flamingo, and those that now have the Aquarius, for keeping us here and allowing us to have these conventions. I really, really want to say a great thank you to them.
Okay, well, now we are going to plug your appearance one more time, then we'll let you go, Robert. It'll be
at the Integratron out near Giant Rock, near the town of Landers, out of Yucca Valley, California, about 15 miles or so, out in the desert. And it's a marvelous building. It's really a phenomenal building by itself. We even have a picture of light coming away from it. That's a actual psychic phenomena. And I will be speaking most of Saturday, the April 21st. Frank Strange is on April 22nd.
Now, when you're in there, in the Integratron itself, what happens exactly?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be speaking inside the Integratron.
I know you won't be, but I'm just wondering if somebody ever goes in there.
They do. Many people go, and they have what they call a sound bath.
What is that about?
Well, actually, they're immersed in a sound field, a frequency sound field, and I obviously they're going to feel something. I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. Like frequencies or something. It's not going to be. It's not going to be harmful.
I figured you'd probably been in there and tried that.
Well, more or less, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's right. But it is a phenomenal building because you can stand in one point on the second floor, where there's a hole, okay, that's to the floor, and you can speak in a whisper or whatever it is, and you can be heard at the wall, the inside wall of that building, even though in a whisper you shouldn't be heard. But you can actually hear it. It magnifies somewhere or another. It's very strange. So there's
Robert.
It has phenomena.
Okay, we'll look forward to seeing you out in the California desert in April.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you so very much. And thank everybody for listening and tuning in to Jerry Pippin's
UFO Files.
That's right.
Thank you very much. This has been an interesting show from the UFO Congress for sure. Roberta Scott's been our on-location producer, and our tape editor was Jane Swartley. Until next time, cheers.
The doors are finally open at shopjerrypippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features 3 different Jerry Pippin UFO Files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at shopjerrypippin.com.